is Go Big U with Bob Linden.
And we continue now. And today our guest is Will Tuttle, PhD, who is a scholar, artist, pianist, composer, educator, author, spiritual pilgrim. Trained to be a Buddhist monk in his background. His background includes a doctorate from Berkeley, training as a Zen Buddhist monk, and now he has authored a book called The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. Welcome, Dr. Tuttle. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great, Bob.
Great to have you here with us today, Will. So, for a while there, you thought you were the only voice connecting the issues that relate to diet and world peace, and you finally started.
Right. Yeah, you're doing a great job here with that, too.
Well, yes, and here's your book that does just that also, and it goes so unnoticed. So what's the major premise of your book in the World Peace Diet?
The main premise of the book is that there's a lurking shadow in our culture that's invisible, and it's our mentality. It's the mentality that's required by the violence that we inflict on animals for food. And since we basically at a deep level are very uncomfortable with how we treat animals for food, we learn at an early age to disconnect from what's on our plate, to disconnect from the suffering that we're causing, and that this causes us as a culture and as individuals to disconnect from our spiritual resources, and also to disconnect from the truth that we are, that we have a fundamental compassionate aspect or compassionate nature, that is our true nature. And we learn to harden ourselves and really to see ourselves essentially as predators, because we eat the flesh and of animals, and especially the flesh of animals that are cruelly confined and killed, and the secretions of animals that are cruelly confined. And so all of this, again, is invisible because we would rather not talk about it, not just us, you know, as the people in the culture, but really the, you know, people at every stage of our culture, the leaders, the government people, the academics, the scientists, as well as the people who are writing, you know, plays and movies, and it just goes all the way through the culture. No one really wants to look at this because no one wants to look behind the curtain of what we're doing to animals. So that's that mentality, really, of violence and then of covering it up creates a very powerful psychological field that forces us into really two things. One is to numb ourselves to what we're doing, not only to animals, but really to each other. And then secondly, as I think Jung was very perceptive to see, that the shadow always ends up getting projected. So then to project the violence and terrorism that we're causing onto some evil enemy that we have to create, and then we have to create lots of weapons to kill him and go after him, you know, so this has been going on really for since animals were first domesticated about 8,000 to 10,000 years ago, I think is when we really had the last major revolution in our culture, and it was a revolution that we really, we haven't had the next revolution, and I think the next revolution will be a vegan revolution, will be when we have a breakthrough and move beyond this mentality of violence and the numbing and covering up of that violence. That's, I think, the real revolution that's called for now.
And so the next revolution is the vegan revolution.
Yeah, that's the one, Bob, because, you know, the scientific revolution, so-called, and the industrial revolution and the communications revolution people are talking about a lot now and so forth really didn't change anything in terms of our basic mentality. They just reinforced it, really, if anything. But our revolution has to go deeper than that, and I think our culture is really organized at its very core around seeing animals as mere commodities and herding them and eating them at the end of the day and all during the day. So that's the fundamental core, and a revolution that we really long for, I think, in our spirit, is the next level of our evolution would be to see animals as beings, you know, to see beings as beings, not as things.
Right. Well, I suppose some people who might be listening now would think, what do you mean that there's violence at the core of our culture? and you say animal abuse is the centerpiece of our civilization, that the driving force between the dilemmas that we face, war, addictions, family breakdowns, you know, all stem from the mentality of the exploitation of other beings. And you
right.
know, that is so covered up. Who would imagine, I mean, that, what, the eating of a Happy Meal? Is that an example of what you're talking about?
Yeah, that's a perfect example. You know, the idea that the burgers grow in a burger patch and the meals are Happy Meals, you know, like a burger is like an orange or an apple that just sort of offers itself to us. And actually, if we talk to anyone who's worked in a slaughterhouse, or in a factory farm, or seen interviews with these people, they will say it's always just the opposite. These animals absolutely resist being killed. They'll do anything they can to protect themselves and protect their loved ones, their families. And so we absolutely are engaged in enormous degree of violence. It's incomprehensible. 30 million mammals and birds and about 45 million fish every day in the United States are slaughtered, and these are forces that are really really huge. You know, I think it's very naive to think that the forces that it takes, really the psychological forces and the physical violence that it takes to kill, confine and kill that many animals every day, that these seeds that we sow by these actions just sort of disappear into thin air. You know, we don't create any seeds by doing that. And I think the reason we are so naive and think that that doesn't hurt us in any way is that the animals themselves cannot retaliate. You know, they're not going to sue us. They're not going to come back and hit us, you know, or their children won't directly. But our violence itself retaliates against us. And that's something I think we're not, unfortunately, I guess we haven't matured spiritually to the point where we see that what goes around really does come around again, and the violence that we inflict on others does come back ultimately, as all the traditions of the world, the spiritual traditions of the world, have emphasized this point. They all agree on that whatever we harm others, we actually harm ourselves even more, because we deaden the vital spark of life and of compassion and of wisdom in ourselves, and we become capable of inhumane acts. We really lose our way, and I think that's what our culture, I think we're realizing that. Hopefully we're realizing when we see that what we do to animals, we end up doing to each other, and other humans we're treating the same way as animals.
Yeah, I mean, I often talk metaphorically of you are what you eat, and you're ingesting all the suffering, the terror, the torture, the fear of the animals, and it does turn out that's the effect physiologically also. You know, you talk about the metaphysics of food, right? Is that
well? Yeah, actually, I have a whole chapter on the metaphysics of food, which I think, you know, unfortunately has really. Since our culture, you know, is quite materialistic, if something is not physically measurable, then we just say it doesn't exist. And I think that's an extremely short-sighted, shallow view of the nature of reality. And, you know, there's a lot of research now pointing to what ancient traditions have said for a long time, that what we are as humans is not just a physical thing, that we are consciousness, that we are, we could say we're spirit, but we definitely are consciousness. And when I eat something like a piece of flesh from an animal, I'm not just eating a physical thing. I'm actually eating a vibrational frequency that is extremely, you know, it's filled with grief and pain. And I think if we were more sensitive, we would know that. But we are, in our culture, as children, we've been taught from a very young age to desensitize ourselves, especially men, to disconnect from our feelings, because a herding culture requires men who are capable of sustained violence against animals, and we are living still, even though we can't see the animals anymore because they're locked away on factory farms, we're still living in what is essentially a herding culture that requires men to brutalize animals. So this desensitization, I think, is what really causes us to be able to do this violence. But I think as we become more sensitized and we start to wake up and awaken and feel, then we just wouldn't be able to do it. We would just, if we held a hamburger in our hand, I think we would begin to either weep or scream, but we wouldn't just be able to, certainly wouldn't be able to eat it when we saw what actually the energy was there.
Right. Well, you blame our herding culture on leading to oppressive hierarchical society, large scale warfare.
Right, and especially the domination of the feminine principle, I think, is a big part of that. Because if you really look carefully at what we do to animals for food, it's basically the female animals that are most brutally treated, and it's their products that we use the most, and it's the female animals that are kept in oppressive conditions much longer. Your early herders realized early on that the way for them to maximize meat production and milk production was to have lots of females and just a few males. And so the manipulation and domination of, really, I think we all know in our hearts what's the most beautiful and sacred aspects of our human life, which is the nurturing of the young and supporting and loving and raising the young. These feminine functions are really very sacred, I think, to us. And for us to so brutally dominate cows, for example, for their milk and steal their babies away, you know, repeatedly, and to put hens in cages where they're so extremely confined and steal their eggs and kill all the males and then kill them so brutally. This really represses our whole feminine aspect. And again, spiritual traditions have recognized that intuition and spiritual sensitivity are basically aspects that are also feminine, that both men and women, we have these aspects. And the other aspect, the masculine, which is more rational and analytical and knows by dividing and by separating, has just taken the ascendancy and has created a situation where we can justify anything, you know, rationally. We can destroy nature and animals and each other and have this perverse kind of rationale behind it. And I think it's really tied in many ways to the habits, to the practice of eating animal foods every day. It's this ritual that we are trained in from the time we lose our mother's breast. Suddenly there we are, you know, eating the lamb and the veal.
Mm-hmm. And you've come to the conclusion, as many great thinkers have, and I believe it too, that there will never be world peace as long as animals are eaten.
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. I remember when I was in school, I learned early on, I learned the Pythagorean theorem, A squared plus B squared equals C squared, in terms of geometry. But there was another Pythagorean theorem. Pythagoras said, as long as men massacre animals, they will kill each other. And for some reason, they didn't teach me that one. But, that, I think what he was saying, and I think it operates with mathematical certainty that, you know, we cannot think that we can have a mentality of that is willing and able to just see these beings as objects to be killed and used for our own benefit, as commodities that we buy and sell and kill and confine, without having that mentality eventually do the same thing to us. And Tolstoy said the same thing. St. Francis, in the research that I've done on the book, I realized that this is a theme that has come down through both Eastern and Western cultures over and over and over and over again. In Buddhist tradition, in the Jain tradition, the Hindu tradition, in many places in the Christian and Jewish traditions, Islamic tradition, it's really universal, and yet it's just repressed. And it's amazing to me, I think, that I could actually go through an entire PhD program, getting a bachelor's, a master's, a PhD, reading thousands, really, of books and articles in philosophy and in psychology, sociology, anthropology, history, literature, education. My PhD was in education, and never once anywhere read one sentence that said perhaps one of the factors that leads to or contributes to the problems that we have in the world is the fact that we're eating animals for food and that there's a mentality of violence that is required for that. I mean, that was never, ever, ever, it's a complete taboo. It was never raised in thousands of books and articles. And I think that's the amazing thing. It's also totally invisible.
It's also continued now in the sense that it's not considered a factor in fossil fuel consumption and global warming and in competition for natural resources, for water. It's the major factor, from what I understand, that we can combat global warming best by stopping meat eating, because methane is one of the greatest contributing factors, and that's related to cow consumption. So.
Right. No, you're totally right, Bob, and it's almost comical, really, to see how a scientific study will come out and say that, and it will just fall flat. Nobody will pick it up and say, "Oh, okay, let's really cut down on the amount of hamburger we're eating, because that's obviously a main factor." It's the it's the evidence, I guess, of how badly we feel about it, but also, I guess, of some level of addiction, I would think, to this that we can't really stop. We don't want to talk about it.
Very strong addiction. What do you think it is difficult for people, not to partake in our culture's food? Is it hard for people to say, "Oh, I'm not gonna eat that anymore"? I mean, it's
actually for me, it wasn't very. I mean, I can't say it wasn't very hard, but I was young. I was about 21 or 22, and I was on a spiritual pilgrimage. Actually, physically, just walking from New England to Alabama. I ended up at the farm in Tennessee, and the farm was vegan, and I was already feeling somewhat uncomfortable, even though I was raised eating animals with it, because I was doing a lot of meditating and so forth. But suddenly being in a community of 800 people that was vegan, I mean, they were all vegan, all the kids were vegan, the school was vegan, everything was, and the food was delicious, and the people were happy and strong and healthy, I gave it up gladly and easily. So I think the main obstacle is the fact that we are, as humans, there's really two things. We're very strongly, I think, like all, pretty much all species, conditioned by our parents and our culture when we're young. I think there's. I realized this when I was in Switzerland a few years ago, watching a mother duck feeding her ducklings, and I saw that she was spending a lot of time teaching them how to feed. And then I realized that is perhaps the number one most important thing that any parent of any species teaches his or her young is how to feed, and it's no different for us. So for me to come along and question someone's food that, their mother taught them to eat and their father taught them to eat with his barbecues, it goes pretty deeply. It's sort of a deep, ancient kind of distrust of questioning what our culture's food, the tribe and the parents taught us to eat.
Right.
So that's,
you don't want
one
to offend
factor.
The family.
And then the other, is just the fact that it takes a real breakthrough to make these connections, because they're so hidden in our culture.
Yeah, and you don't want to offend the boss or whatever. I remember
I had
a job interview for a radio station in Washington, D.C., and I got off the plane and, I said, "Well, could we go to an ethnic restaurant or something?" He said, "No, we're going to Blackie's House of Beef."
Oh, no.
So, they weren't really sympathetic there to, like, "Well, is the broccoli cooked in butter or is it oil?" it was really weird.
Right.
But that's it.
Yeah, we humans, again, we're very gregarious, and so many people are, that's the big block, is they think, what would my boss, my mother, my parents, so forth, how would they react to it? So I think, it takes a real spiritual breakthrough on some level for someone, I think, in our culture to go vegan, because it requires what I call in the book leaving home, which means on a deep level questioning the underlying assumptions of our culture. And again, I don't think there's anything more fundamental than viewing animals as commodities, and nature really is basically one big commodity. So to go vegan is a complete reversal, and it's extremely subversive. I think it's probably nothing more, more revolutionary in a positive sense, than to eat a plant-based diet for ethical reasons. It, mm-hmm. It's really an amazing challenge to our culture.
Sure.
And I think it plants seeds, though, of...
Well, if animal abuse is the centerpiece of our civilization, then going vegan is a bit of a challenge to that, but but in a healthy, positive way. You also say that Jesus and Buddha taught us to question cultural assumptions, so...
Right, absolutely. They both did, and I think all the spiritual teachers have emphasized that you'll never... number one, never attain spiritual, real spiritual wisdom, and number two, never advance our culture unless we question the cultural assumptions, the assumptions of the culture we're born into. That's absolutely essential.
And you think that we should spiritualize our conduct?
Well, yes, absolutely. there's kind of a belief, I think, in progressive circles that our behavior doesn't really matter that much, that really what matters is our thinking, our consciousness. And I've had people say, because I speak actually pretty much every Sunday at a Unity church, sometimes at Unitarian churches around the United States, and these are basically progressive people who are open to new ideas, and a lot of people will say, well, I don't really push the vegetarianism or the veganism because I know when people... raise their level of consciousness, then they'll naturally be more sensitive to animal suffering, and they'll be naturally, they'll just kind of in a natural way stop eating meat and eventually go vegan. But my response to that is, that's a nice theory, but if people don't change their behavior, they won't change their consciousness. I think it's very difficult for someone to raise their consciousness while they're still eating animal foods, because that repeated behavior of just seeing bacon instead of a pig keeps the consciousness at a certain level, and it puts a ceiling on things. And I think that's why spiritual traditions have always emphasized both. They've always said you have to act ethically. There's been, like in the Buddhist tradition, the five precepts, don't kill, steal, lie, and so forth. That's a foundation for spiritual practice, and we have to live these teachings in order to understand them. We have to actually live them.
Oh, so in line with your thinking on this, this is such a great book, The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. It's from Will Tuttle. You can go to Will's website. It's willtuttle.com, willtuttle.com. I'm speaking at a Unitarian Universalist Church in Anaheim on February 26th, and the subject is Achieving World Peace through Veganism.
Great.
Initially, when I was invited to speak there, they were talking about, well, can we take it in steps and recommend organic meat and organic dairy first? And I said, I don't think I'm going to recommend that step.
Right.
I think we're jumping right to vegan here.
So. Well, in actual practice, there are some people that go straight to vegan. I went to vegetarian for a couple of years and then went vegan, but I think it's really what you're saying is absolutely correct. We have to teach the basic principles that animals are not our, as Peter says, are not ours to use and eat and wear. They're not our property. They're beings. And since it's unnecessary for us, and we know that clearly now, to eat them, to use them that way, then there's really no reason to do it other than the fact that we're basically brainwashed into doing it. But that's
right.
Still not a reason.
And had I known that the suffering that... goes into dairy, and who thinks of that? I go to peace marches, and people say, "Well, I'm a vegetarian because I don't want to hurt animals. I just drink milk." So it's like, "Well, let us talk about dairy here."
Exactly. I think that's really important, and that's why I have a whole chapter in the book on dairy and eggs, because I think certainly it's underestimated in our culture, the suffering that these animals go through, especially, both dairy cows and hens, because their suffering is protracted, and with modern methods although I don't think it was ever really that great, but with modern methods especially, the way they're impregnated very violently. They're pushed with hormones.
Some would call that rape, you know?
Yeah, I think you would have to, really. I mean, exactly what it is. And, mm-hmm. and
so
then,
there's a rape, there's a kidnapping, and there's a...
Right.
And actually,
the most bizarre thing is that the cows would never give the quantity of milk that they want to get. I mean, a cow will only give 25 pounds of milk maximum, typically, in the wild. So we've got them now giving over 100 pounds of milk a day, and the only way is through giving them hormones. And then the other thing, though, one of the big factors is feeding them cholesterol. Cholesterol boosts their milk output, and so cholesterol, of course, is only obtained in meat. So we have cows on dairies eating a lot of fish and chicken and pigs, and always they ate cows, too, until that bizarre practice caused the formation of prions, and we have mad cow disease. But they were actually eating their own species, and actually through the rendering practices could very well have been eating their own babies, because very often these babies are just rendered. They're not worth anything at the veal market, if the veal market's low.
And through the rendering...
That was the standard practice, yeah.
And through the rendering process also, euthanized dogs and cats go in the feed.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's
right.
Bad things happen when vegetarian animals eat animal products, that's for sure. So
right.
We're just about out of time. Will, did I forget anything you want to get to? We have about 30 seconds, a minute.
Oh, I see. No, I mean, it's been great talking to you, and I think that I'm so happy. I felt like this movement and really our world needed a book that would sort of give the big picture and tie everything together, and I kept waiting to read it. And finally I realized that I guess I was the one that was ordained to write the book. And it's been called by PETA Magazine the ultimate why-to-go vegan book. But I think, you know, it's really now the revolution, this positive transformational type revolution is really possible for us as human beings, and the missing key is to become aware of what we're actually eating, to go vegan is really the key thing for us to do now.
Well, nothing's more important than world peace. So here you have the World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony, and the message is go vegan. Thank you, Will Tuttle, for being with us today on Go Vegan with Bob Linden.
Thank you so much, Bob.
It was a pleasure.